Keep up to date with the past on the 100 Years Ago Show with Mark Stein.
A lightning strike in Italy, an emperor in Grub Street, and are you ready for three-dimensional pictures? It's September 1922.
100 years from today.
Your world news update following catastrophic defeat in the war against Turkey. Greece is now under a revolutionary government controlled by two army colonels and a naval commander. The Navy's decision to join the mutiny was the final straw. Its ships are now ferrying troops to Athens. Ahead of their departure, a military airplane delivered an ultimatum to the remnants of the existing government, demanding the abdication of King Constantine and the dissolution of Parliament. The Greek cabinet has resigned, and the king has left for what is believed to be exile in Italy. He will be succeeded by his son George.
All night long they chatter away, all day long they were happy and gay, swinging and singing in a hunky-munky way.
This is King Constantine's second abdication. You will recall that in 1917 he abandoned the throne in favor of his middle son, Alexander, who died just 2 years ago at 27 after being bitten by a monkey while strolling in the palace grounds. What might have been if not for that freak accident? The Greek humiliation is turning into a bloodbath in Asia Minor. The Aegean port city of Kydonia is said to have the finest olive oil in the region. It is also an almost wholly Greek community that has now fallen to Turkish troops. Following widespread massacres of Christians, Greek Orthodox priests in the city, including the Metropolitan Bishop Gregory, were waiting on the dock for evacuation by foreign flagged ships, an evacuation to which the Turkish authorities had supposedly agreed. Instead, the priests have been captured, taken to prison, and told they will be executed. The Turks have now overrun the entire so-called neutral zone. British General Sir Charles Harrington has given them 48 hours to withdraw from the Dardanelles. It is not, however, going well for the hastily assembled British fleet. The Royal Navy destroyer HMS Speedy collided with a Dutch tugboat while on manoeuvres in the Sea of Marmara and sank within 7 minutes. 87 of the crew were rescued. 10 men are dead. The Turkish nationalist leader Mustafa Kemal has agreed to meet the Allies for a conference, but the Turks have said they will not consent to the Anglo-French demand for demilitarization of the Sea of Marmara and of Thrace.
All that are out of Ireland, let their happy feelings flow, like the old river channels flowing free.
The cork has been out of Ireland for some time now. You'll remember that the decision to hang those involved in the Easter Uprising of 1916 enraged huge numbers of Irishmen and prompted them into open revolt against His Majesty's government. Now, a mere 6 years later, one group of Irish nationalists is proposing to hang the other group of Irish nationalists. The provisional government of the incoming Irish Free State has brought in a Special Powers Act authorising military trials and the death penalty for those actively opposing the establishment of the Free State. The Dáil Éireann, the legislature of the so-called Irish Republic, has approved the new act and also an important constitutional provision supporting a parliament comprised of the King and two houses, part of the ongoing alignment of Irish and British political theory ahead of the inauguration of the new Free State. The Kingdom of Italy has enough political chaos without adding to it through acts of God. Nevertheless, in the course of a violent storm, a lightning bolt struck the Falconara fort near Spezia on the Gulf of Genoa. 1,500 tons of explosives were stored in tunnels deep below the fort. The resulting blast blew away the entire top of the hill on which the fort stood and destroyed almost everything within a 10-mile radius. Every window in Spezia has been shattered, every tree uprooted for miles around. The dead number so far 144, but many hundreds are still trapped beneath the rubble. For once, politics is suspended, and all fascisti in the province of Genoa have been directed by their party leaders to assist the Italian army in rescue and recovery. Raisuli was a big-time sheikh for many years, a sharif, descendant of Muhammad, pasha of Tangier, governor of Jibala, a Robin Hood figure to many Arabs, but a common brigand to Spanish authorities in Morocco. You will recall his kidnapping of the American citizen Yon Perdicaris and President Roosevelt's famous demand to the Moroccans, Perdicaris alive or Raisuli dead. Raisuli is not dead, but he has very belatedly patched up his differences with the Spanish and agreed to join forces with the Spanish army in the Rif War to see off rival Sheikh Abd el-Krim. The messy aftermath of the Great War may prove highly lucrative if you're a Kaiser with time on his hands. The memoirs of the former German Emperor, Wilhelm II, have been procured for serialization by the New York Times, the Chicago Tribune, and other newspapers. His former Imperial Majesty is making his authorial debut under the name William Hohenzollern. Get used to that byline, because the serialization will extend over 30 installments. Is Kaiser Bill's book one of those you can't put down? Well, the Times and Tribune have started with his memories of the year 1878 and the Emperor's response to long-time accusations about his relations with a famous German Chancellor. Quote, "It is stupid to accuse me of not having recognized the greatness of Prince Bismarck. The opposite is the truth. I revered and idolized him, nor could it be otherwise." We shall see whether this sort of thing can sustain itself over 30 episodes.
I've got the blue, I've got the blue, I've got the alcoholic blue. No more beer, my heart to cheer. Goodbye, whiskey, you used to make me pretty.
If you're a patron of Reisenweber's Cafe, you've certainly got the alcoholic blues for two-thirds of a century. Reisenweber's has been a landmark fixture at Columbus Circle in Manhattan, one of the largest and most popular restaurants and nightclubs in New York, with daily receipts rising to almost $4,000 a day, a phenomenal sum for a dining establishment. But then came Prohibition. Earlier this year, the authorities moved to close down Reisenweber's on the grounds that liquor was being served on its premises. Now, federal judge Martin Manton has ordered the restaurant be shuttered. This is the first time that the injunction clause of the Volstead Act has been invoked in the Southern District of New York. On the other hand, you can now safely have a tipple in international waters. The U.S. Bureau of Prohibition is changing its policy in order to limit enforcement of prohibition laws to within 3 miles of the American coastline, except in cases where vessels outside the limit have been in communication with persons on shore, in which case they will be assumed to be rum runners and the like. Following its ratification by by the Mexican Congress, the De La Huerta-Lamont Treaty, is now in effect. This is an agreement by the Mexican government and the International Committee of Bankers on Mexico regarding repayment of the country's substantial debts incurred during its revolution. The bankers are satisfied they are getting everything they wanted, because the Mexican government feels it is a necessary price to pay for the normalization of its international relations. August Hoger is a North Dakota pastor who raised money to pay for the medical treatment of a young boy with polio. They raised $2,000 more than needed, and the Reverend Hoger has decided to use the surplus to found the Evangelical Lutheran Good Samaritan Society. It plans to open a center for other disabled persons in North Dakota. Trommeln in der Nacht, Drums in the Night, is a new play that's making quite a splash at the Kammerspiele in Munich. Played out against the Spartacist uprising in Berlin, the original title was apparently Spartacus. The play tells the story of a young woman forced to choose between the wealthy arms manufacturer to whom she is betrothed and her long-lost love, belatedly returned from the World War. The young playwright is a name to watch, Bertolt Brecht. Have you seen the new Cecil B. DeMille picture, Manslaughter? It stars Laertrice Joy as a wealthy wild woman who accidentally kills a motorcycle cop and is prosecuted for manslaughter by her lawyer husband. But that's not what's got everybody talking about the new picture. Instead, it's the lavish orgy scene, which includes a rather intense kiss between two persons of the same sex. Hard to see that catching on at your local picture palace. On the other hand, it could be worse. It could be an orgy in three dimensions. The Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles has hosted the premiere of what it calls the first 3D film, as in three dimensions. The Power of Love has the usual plot. Don Almeida runs into financial difficulties and so pledges his daughter to Don Alvarez. But it is filmed using the stereoscopic red and green anaglyph system. So one watches it wearing cardboard spectacles, giving the drama a three-dimensional effect, such as one might experience at a stage play. However, The Power of Love goes further and offers picturegoers a choice of finale. If you close one or the other eye and watch only the red lens or the green lens, you can pick between a happy ending or a tear-jerking tragic denouement.
Take me out to the ball game, take me out with the crowd. Oh, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back.
What a ball game for New York Yankees fans. The Yankees clinched the American League pennant with a 3-1 win over the Boston Red Sox, finishing one game ahead of the second place St. Louis Browns. What a ball game for New York Giants fans. The Giants clinched their second straight National League pennant with a 5-4 victory over the St. Louis Cardinals in 10 innings. Tough on St. Louis, were the fans of the Browns or Cardinals.
Just see those Pullman porters,
dolled up with perfume waters,
bought by their dimes and quarters.
Here they come, here they come, here they come.
Just see those starched up collars,
hear how that captain hollers.
Keep time, keep time, it's worth $1,000.
To see those tip collectors, those upper berth inspectors,
those Pullman porters on parade.
The Pullman porters are on parade for Burns Caldwell, a railwayman all his life. Since starting as a clerk in the Vandalia Railroad in Indiana, he rose to become president of the Wells Fargo Express Company and then founder just 4 years ago of the Railway Express Agency, his package delivery service. Mr. Caldwell was in his stateroom aboard a Pullman bringing him back from a fishing trip in Canada, when he was stricken by a heart attack just before the train reached Burlington, Vermont. And so a lifelong man of the railroad tracks came to journey's end. Mr. Caldwell is dead at 64. Carlo Canieva was an Italian general who fought the dervishes in Eritrea and then took on the Ottoman Empire in North Africa, conquering Tripolitania for the Kingdom of Italy. The general is dead at 77. General Ernst von Hüttner was a Prussian cavalry officer who served during the late war as the commander of the Luftstreitkräfte, the German Army's Air Force. He is dead at 62.
Is there a lander here for me? Was the question he would ask the postman at the closing hour each day. He turned sadly with a sigh while a tear stood in his eye. He'd bow his head and slowly walk away. Was it from a gray-haired mother, a sister or a brother? He waited all these weary years in vain. Till from early morning light he would watch till dark at night for the letter, but the last it never came.
The letter that never came. There was a lot of that in America not so long ago. Senator Thomas E. Watson was once the leader of the Populist Party and indeed in 1896 was a vice presidential nominee to William Jennings Bryan on the Populist ticket. In those days, he advocated that poor whites and blacks should unite against the elites. However, his position on racial matters evolved, and in his 1908 presidential campaign, he ran as a white supremacist. He became antipathetic also to the Catholic Church and what he called, quote, the rich Jews. His greatest legacy arose from his campaign to make the post office deliver mail to remote rural farms. We take RFD, Rural Free Delivery, for granted now, but it was the most expensive undertaking ever embarked on by the US Postal Service, and it is somewhat ironic that the man who greatly expanded its operations should have wound up having his own publications banned for delivery by the post office after he opposed American entry into the World War and demanded to know, do you want your son killed in Europe in a quarrel you have nothing to do with? Senator Watson is dead at 66. William Seymour was an influential Negro preacher whose revivalist skills helped popularize many Pentecostal practices, such as speaking in tongues. However, he fell out with many of his denominational comrades, and his once famous church on Azusa Street in Los Angeles had dwindled to an impoverished and shrunken congregation. The Reverend Seymour is dead at 52. The 6th Earl Spencer was a former groom-in-waiting to Queen Victoria and Lord Chamberlain during the reign of Edward VII. He is dead at 64, 4 months after contracting a chill while performing his duties as Lord Lieutenant of Northamptonshire. Is it 3 o'clock in the morning? Or is it 4 o'clock in the morning? Or maybe only 2 o'clock in the morning? Sir Robert Pearce was the Liberal Member of Parliament for the Leek Division of Staffordshire and in 1908 proposed the first daylight saving bill in any national legislature. It did not pass and would require the global conflagration of the Great War to make coal conservation sufficiently important to change the clocks. Sir Robert's own time has come. He is dead at 82. And that's the way of the world, September 1922.
100 years from today, 100 years from today.
The 100 Years Ago Show is a production of Markstein Enterprises and O'Kill Media. All rights reserved.